Welcome to episode 181 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for June 22nd, 2011. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to another special episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This is episode number 181, and once again, we're coming to you from Deer Valley near Park City, Utah, my hometown. It's day two of the 2011 edition of Press Camp. Before we get started with today's interviews, I'd like to remind you that this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast, where you're going to find an amazing selection, fantastic prices, and unparalleled customer service. Right now, as I told you yesterday, Jensen USA has a great deal on a buy that they made on some Shimano wheel sets, including the Shimano 6600 Altegra wheel set, regularly $649, now just $275 for the set at Jensen USA. Go ahead and check it out. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast or go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page. You, once again, are going to get a great deal on an amazing Shimano Altegra 6600 wheel set or any of the other thousands of products available on jensenusa.com. We thank jensenusa.com so much for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, we're back here once again at Deer Valley near Park City, Utah for day two of Bike Press Camp. And as I told you last year and a little bit yesterday, Bike Press Camp is an opportunity for journalists from all over the world to get together with bike brands and bike component brands and clothing and electronics makers. Anybody who makes anything for bicycles has the opportunity to come to Press Camp and in a more relaxed atmosphere than a traditional trade show, in a more one-on-one setting where you're really able to just sit down and discuss what you both love, which is bikes and bike components. It gives each of us an opportunity to preview some of the new things coming out for 2012 and beyond, and then bring you that information. So I had another great day of interviews. One of the things that you'll hear in today's interviews is I'll introduce each of them as, hi, this is David from the Fredcast, and also with Bike Hugger, because I was sort of teaming up with Byron from Bike Hugger today as we went from brand to brand. While I was doing audio recording, he was doing video recording. So you'll be able to check that out at bikehugger.com. But in the meantime, enjoy today's interviews from the 2011 edition of Bike Press Camp here in Park City, Utah. And I'll be back tomorrow with our final day of coverage from Press Camp. One other note, late this evening, we had the opportunity to sit down at a real table. It was myself and Carlton Reed and Byron from Bike Hugger, as well as Chris Zygmunt from Lifeboat Events, the company that puts on Bike Press Camp. And we recorded in the same room an episode of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast that we will release later this week. Go ahead and check that out probably Saturday or Sunday coming up at www.the-spokesmen.com. Okay, without any further delay, here are my interviews from today at Press Camp. Hi, this is David from the Fredcast and for Bike Hugger, and we're in the Asso suite. We're talking to John Lindstrom. You're in sales and marketing for Assos. And I want to start a little bit with the company history, because I think that you have a really compelling story to tell. I know it's a family-owned business. How long have you been around, and how did you get your start?
Assos was started in the mid-70s, about 1976, by a gentleman named Tony Meyer. He was a Swiss engineer, and the first product that he actually created was the first carbon fiber bicycle. I had to get permission from the Swiss government to actually produce it. To this day, there are only three in existence, two which we have and one that is in possession of a private collector. With the bicycle, it was a Swiss Olympic project for the athletes. And the first thing that they did was take the bike and the riders and the athletes into the wind tunnel and set them up to see how fast and what the advantage was. the bike was pretty good, but then they noticed right away that the wool and cotton blend clothing they were using was a little bit of a hindrance once they stripped the riders down naked in the wind tunnel. With connections to the ski industry, they realized right away that a skin suit would probably be the best option to help save even more speed. So soft goods were the obvious choice then, and from there on out, hard goods were left behind for the most part, and soft goods were the start of Ossos as we know it today.
So I think a lot of people would be really surprised to know that you guys made the very first carbon fiber bicycle. I'm guessing that the approval from the government was because carbon fiber was a military technology?
Correct.
Yeah. And I'm also glad that I wasn't there to see these wind tunnel tests. So, yeah, I'm sure. So from those original wind tunnel tests, what was the next evolution in the clothing technology that Ossos made?
Lycra. We were the first company to make Lycra shorts for the cyclists. So total body comfort was the main goal, and that has been the focus since day one.
So again, I think people are going to be surprised. First carbon fiber bicycle, first Lycra bib short. I'm just curious. I don't think a lot of people know that. That's a story that needs to be told.
I agree.
And so from there, from those original Lycra bib shorts, where'd you go?
The first thing that they did was it's a family-based company, and through the family connections in the racing industry, they made some good connections with key racers back in the day in the 80s and so. And we've had good connections with racing and product development. Lauren Fignot has been a good racer for us, or was a good racer for us back in the day. And basically, it was a big effort to try and convert athletes to try out Lycra instead of the wool. Once a few people adopted it, the momentum started growing, and more people got on board with the product. And that was about in the 80s or so. And then 90s, a little bit more of the progression. But then stuff evolved from the goatskin chamois into the synthetic chamois that we now know today.
And you keep saying a family-owned company. How big is the company? Because a lot of the apparel companies that we're used to are these mega multinational firms. What's the size of Ossos?
Ossos worldwide is about 40 people or so, roughly. We're headquartered in Lugano, Switzerland. And then we also have a North American office in Montreal, Canada.
Okay, so with just a few people, really, in the company, 40 people, what I've seen today so far is some pretty amazing innovation. What are some of the newest technologies that people will find when they go to their local dealer, either now or in 2012?
I'd say the biggest thing for us right now for the spring or for the upcoming fall season would be our new rain gear that we have coming out for us. We break down the riding season into seven seasons, and our newest season is called Clima X. The fall and spring transitionary season, especially with the recent weather, it's definitely a time when people want to get out and ride, and we've got some great new products that would help alleviate some of the traditional issues that you might find during that time.
So with this new rain gear, what are some of the features that people should look for?
What we have right now is we have a couple new raincoats that are coming out, and so it's all in the details, and that's really where Ossos is really known for. You know, some of the details, for example, on the jackets, like the climate chutes or the storm prints, rear vents on the back of the jacket that also double as pockets, so you can get in without having to lift up your jacket and expose yourself and get yourself even more wet. Mm-hmm. Venting on the jacket where you have it basically from the cuff all the way to the pit and then down to the waist. So when you're in the riding position, because it is riding gear, you're venting and you're not building up more sweat on the inside. That'd be some of the pretty good stuff too. The accessories have also been beefed up quite a bit too. So, you know, booties are a lot more durable. The cuffs are a little bit more robust as well too. And it's a nice silicone gripper on the top, so you're not getting water on the inside. So you're keeping yourself dry, being able to ride longer then.
Now, beyond the rain gear, I also know that you have several different tiers of product. And I think it's important for consumers, at least, to understand where do they fit in those tiers and which ones appeal to their style of riding.
Sure. Yeah, we do offer three families of basically the shorts are the easiest way to put it. We have the Uno, which is our entry level, but by no means an entry level product. We have the Mille, which is The Uno is more of a race fit. It is our entry level product. Mille is more of an endurance fit, good for bigger people, a little bit more muscular physique. It's a little bit more of a relaxed cut. Biggest seller by far for us. And then the FI13 or that 13 series is our top end level. That is the premier product that we make. No holds barred. That is bar none. Race fit, perfect product.
Now, one of the things that people will notice if they go into their local retailer, and I don't think that just for full transparency, I don't think it's anything that you're ashamed of, your price points are a little bit higher than some of the more mass market clothing lines for athletics. Tell people why that is, what sort of durability they should expect, and you were also telling me earlier about your warranty, and I think that that's very important.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. The attention is really in the details of the product, and it's hard to see without, you know, if you're just looking at a product and holding it in your hand, you're not always going to see the small stuff that goes into it. And that's really one thing that we're trying to focus on is educate the dealers and customers. This is small pieces that go up and make up the value. To the warranty piece, we do offer a lifetime warranty on all of our garments. In Switzerland, we still do have a big sewing staff available and or on hand, and what they do is repairs. If you get a piece, you know, we get bibs that are a couple years old, 5, 10 years old, still in great condition, maybe a seam blew out or something like that. If it's repairable, we do repair it. Zippers we can fix, seams, chamois can be replaced, everything along those lines, as long as it's still in a decent condition overall, we can do that. Torn panels, we can do that.
So attention to detail, not only in the manufacturing, but also in the warranty as well. Agreed. Tell people where they can get more information on the brand and where they might be able to find more of your clothing.
Thanks. www.assos.com, A-S-S-O-S.com would be the best place to go. We have a nice dealer locator on there, so by country, state, everything else, and it filters down by dealer level as well, too. So,
a lot more to the story, a lot more to see. But, John, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one.
David from the Fredcast, and also for Bike Hugger, we're here with Chance from Blue. And, you know, Chance, you were telling us earlier about the history of Blue. Just briefly, how did the company get started?
Our owner had been around for about 30 years in another industry, and they were using a cycling team that he had started to advertise one of his products. And out of that, they found a need for high-end quality carbon fiber race bikes for women and men. And he just decided it's not being provided, and we're going to go out and source it and do it on our own, and here we are almost 8 years later.
So 8 years in, and you said source it, do it on our own. There's a lot of companies out there that will go to Taiwan, go to China, find a mold that they can put their own graphics on. Tell me what Blue does differently.
Well, you definitely got to go to Taiwan and China. I mean, and not just for the food, but we start at the grassroots level. We ride bikes, we race. Chris Pick, who's our head product guy, was a pro for many years. His wife, 6-time national criterium champion. I'm into triathlon. I race mountain bikes, road bikes. So we start there. We make stuff we want to ride. Mm-hmm. And then we do designs in-house. Chris is on the CAD. We're testing stuff. We're in the wind tunnel testing stuff. And then we come up with our designs. We take them to the factory and say, here's our drawings. Here's what we want done. We get the molds. We bring them back. We test them. We make adjustments to them. Test them in the wind tunnel again. But the designs are ours from the bottom to the top. Graphics, frames, layups, carbon fibers, every bit of it comes out of Norcross, Georgia.
And what would you say, let's talk road first, on a Blue road bike, what makes it special?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that you can focus on in the bike industry. I mean, some people play the weight game. They want to have the lightest bike. Aero, stiffness, blah, blah, blah. We've always said that you have to have power transmission. You have to be able to put your foot to the pedal, crank turns the chain rings, drives to the back of the rear wheel. So we try to have a bike that provides a very stiff and responsive bottom bracket. So we build all of our bikes from that point forward. When you look at our bikes, we adapt BB30 across the board. We feel that that's the critical piece. And then from there, we kind of expand out. You start to look at aerodynamics. You start to look at frame weights. We don't traditionally get into the, hey, let's make a 600-gram frame. We want to make a bike that is lightweight, responsive, but most importantly, when you put your foot on the pedal, the bike moves forward.
Absolutely. And now in cross, we were looking at your cross bikes earlier, and one of the things that you mentioned was, right, why am I doing a down, you know, a derailleur that's pulling from the bottom, bottom pole derailleur on a cross bike? You guys did something different, and now people are following your lead, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes from being in the sport and getting around guys like Jonathan Page, you know, the only American to go and live and race full time in Belgium. You know, when you're around that kind of talent and you're in the product, you realize the small details and you know, the mud clearance in the back, and it's piling up, especially if you're racing in Europe. And here comes the derailleur cable right down where the dirtiest part of the bike. And there's already so much friction there. We looked at making a top pole derailleur for a 2x, and nobody had one. And we found a factory that would make us one, and they said, well, you need to buy 5,000 of them. And as a little startup company, that's not reasonable. So Chris was searching around for an answer, and he came across a German guy who makes a product called an Umlenker. And it's real simple. It's just a small piece that you add to your existing derailleur, and it converts it from a down pull to a top pull derailleur. And we put that on all of our Norcross SL builds. Jonathan Page raced it for half of a season before going to DI2 built bike. But you know, it's that kind of attention to detail that makes Blue who we are.
Yeah. Now, you make road bikes, you make cross bikes, but you also make time trial bikes and triathlon bikes. You mentioned something about, right, it's the rider that makes the bike fast. While you make fast bikes, it is up to the rider. How can the rider ensure that if they get one of your bikes, they're going to really be fast?
Well, I as part marketing guy, sales guy, it always drives me nuts to open up a magazine and see brand X say fastest bike in the world, and then I turn the page to brand Y and they say they have the fastest bike in the world. And as we developed the Triad, which was developed in conjunction with USA Triathlon for the Beijing Olympics, we were in the wind tunnel testing and we had some athletes in there, and we realized 75, 80, 85% of the drag, depending on the rider, of the whole bike, 85% of it is coming from the rider itself, not the bike. And so we knew we had a fast bike, but if you have a slow position, it doesn't help you any. So we decided we were going to be the only industry in the company, company in the industry. If you invest in us, we invest in you. You buy our Triad SL frame or complete bike or our Triad EX as a bike, we will pay for you 1 hour in the tunnel to get your position fitted. And it makes a significant impact. We see, very rarely do we see less than a 10% improvement in aerodynamics for a person.
Is anybody else offering that? I mean, other than for race teams to go into a wind tunnel?
No, not at all. I mean, and we do it for our pros. We do it for age groupers. You buy the bike, you come in, you get the experience. And we've had guys who were, you know, just kind of middle of the pack Ironman guys. And without much change to their overall position, saddle height stayed the same, their arms moved a little bit, handlebars went up or down maybe a half a centimeter or so, who gained enough wattage that all things being equal, they would take 45 minutes off of their Ironman time.
Whoa.
If I could put that in a can and sell it, we'd be in a different business.
Put it in the tunnel instead. What about warranty? A lot of times people say, you know, I had an issue with a bike, I called the company and I had an issue. What about with Blue?
You know, one of the things that I'll go back to the grassroots thing. You know, I bought a custom-made bike from France. I had it for 4.5 months, and I got hit by a car because of my own fault. And I ended up cracking the chainstay 4 months into my custom-made bike. It was done. There was nothing I could do about it. Chris has raced all his life and crashed bikes. My wife, you know, 8 months ago, she's going to kill me if she hears this, she drove her bike into the garage, smacked it, sheared the head tube right off. We live that life. We know what it's like. And even if you have the financial wherewithal to be able to replace that bike, it doesn't mean you want to. And so we try to have the best warranty policy we can. If it's a warranty issue on our fault, we take care of it without question, life of the bike. If you have an accident, call us, even if it's not a Blue. You got a Trek, you got an Orbea, you got a whatever. You're running into the garage, we'll help you get on a bike as affordably as we can. It's a pretty substantial discount. We get them back on there. Of course, you have to send us the other bike. But we live that experience, and we know it's hard when you got a brand new $6,000 bike and can't ride it anymore.
Very generous. Now, it's tough in the time that we've got to go through every one of your bikes. But if people want more information to look at the bikes in your line, where can they go?
www.rideblue.com.
Excellent. Chance, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
Perfect. Well done. Yeah, no. This is David from the Fredcast. I'm also with Bike Hugger. We're at Press Camp. I'm talking to Seth from Camelback. Seth, one of the new innovations that I've seen from you this year is the Charge. Talk to me a little bit about this new pack and what makes it different.
Sure. This is the Charge LR, which houses our 70-ounce lumbar reservoir. So it's about 5 pounds of water weight, and by using a lumbar style that wraps around your waist, you get all that water weight off your shoulders, leaves your upper body free to move. So if you're rolling big rocks or you're just standing up and powering up a big hill, you're just free to move up top. With the Charge LR, that's different than our current Octane LR, is you have more cargo, so you can fit your shock pump, tubes, CO2s, tire levers, all that kind of stuff up top. It's got a little bit thicker, but still lightweight padded back panel, so you're not going to feel that poking into your back at all. Mm-hmm. And we've added compression straps around the reservoir. So as you drink, you can tighten the compression straps, and it'll suck the reservoir closer and closer to your back. Keeps the water weight nice and tight, keeps your load stable, not sloshing. Just a nice all-around lightweight pack for hitting the mountain.
Now, for people who aren't looking at the video, describe how you've put a reservoir onto somebody's lumbar area.
It's basically a triangle shape, and it has wings that wrap around. So much like you'd find on a running pack that has wings around your waist with pockets, this reservoir is a horizontal style versus vertical. And it wraps all the way around your lumbar, basically on your lower back, and keeps that weight nice and low.
Okay. I've also seen that you've got some really nice sort of all-mountain packs this year. Let's talk about these.
Yeah, we're launching new for 2012, the Agent and the Asset. Mm-hmm. And the Asset is a little bit more streamlined, single shuttle type pack, 70-ounce or 2-liter. But the Agent's the top dog of the collection. We did all tone-on-tone colors, matching buckles, webbing, zipper pulls, and included a matching color-to-match tube cover. But it's got an NVS ventilated back panel. It'll hold all your armor and full face. It's got a full clamshell opening, and what that means is you can literally pull the top part off the bag and unzip it, and it'll fillet all the way open so you can get to the bottom of your bag without having to pull all your stuff out and get to the shock pump that may be at the bottom. And you'll also find a cell phone pocket on the shoulder harness. You can check your text messages or take photos while you're on the lift. And two fleece line pockets, one for sunglasses and one for maybe a camcorder or your goggles.
Also, I noticed there's a big pocket sort of here in the back. What do you tell people they can put in there?
On the outside, there's a multi-purpose, so you can put your tools, multi-tools, tire lever, and then there's an actual large overflow that unfolds, and you can put a full XC helmet in there, or you can shove, I usually will shove my rain shed layer in there.
Seth, I also noticed that you've got a new bottle for this year, and it's got a filter in it. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, this is the Camelback Groove. It's a portable filtration bottle. And what we did was we actually added a plant-based carbon filter into the drinking straw. So you've got a way that you can drink freshly filtered water basically anywhere. You just fill it up at a faucet, bathroom, hotel, or my best use for this is when I travel, I'll walk through security with an empty bottle. I'm saving $5. I'm not wasting any plastic, and I can go fill up at the drinking fountain and get fresh tasting water. But it basically filters as you drink. So you've got the same bite valve design built into the straw, so you don't need to tip. It's not going to spill, and it's all based in a portable bottle.
Now for filtration, you're talking about filtering for taste?
Yeah, so this is a taste filter. It's NSF certified for chlorine. It'll take out basically all the stinky and nasty tasting stuff you might find in any tap water.
And how long will a filter last?
It'll do 300 refills, which is roughly 3 months of normal use. Mm-hmm. So you can buy, there's a filter pack. It holds two filters for $10. So for under $30, you have filtered water all year long, which is great compared to all the money you might spend buying disposable bottled water.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good for the environment as well.
Yep. Double whammy.
There you go. Yeah. Now, one of the things that I think doesn't get enough attention from your line is a product that I've been using for, well, at least a year, and one that I really like, and that is your Elixir product. Tell everybody what that is.
Our Elixir is it's an electrolyte replacement. It's basically a self-dissolving tablet that works. Each tablet's good for 24 ounces, so you can use it in a reservoir, or you can throw it in one of our bottles. It's the perfect size. It's sugar-free, tastes great. It replaces all your electrolytes, sodium replacement, and it's not going to get sticky or gunky like a sugar-based drink would. So you can run it through your reservoir or in a bottle in a bite valve, and all you need to do is rinse it out. It cleans out easily, and that's a great way to stay hydrated when you need a little bit more than water.
Yeah. Now, there are other, if you will, fizzy tablets on the market. What makes the Elixir different?
We spend a lot of time taste testing. So we actually have three flavors. We've got berry and lemon lime. Lemon lime is my personal favorite. They're actually pretty good if you mix them. Tastes like rainbow sherbet. And that's what's nice about tablet form. And then we have orange, which actually has caffeine in it. So each tablet has the same caffeine as you'd find in a shot of espresso or Red Bull, which is great for morning commutes. But we definitely spend a lot of time taste testing. And with something that's sugar-free and has all the sodium that you need to get hydrated with, it's a tough balance to get that right taste. So
one of the things I like about it is it's a lot easier to carry with me. If I'm on a long ride, I know I'm going to be refilling. I can just put the tube in my jersey pocket as opposed to the old days having Ziplocs everywhere.
Yeah, they're great for travel. Each tube is about $10 retail. It's got 12 tablets. It'll do over 2 gallons of electrolyte replacement drink. So great if you're traveling and you obviously can't carry sports drinks on the plane. So you can just take a tube with you when you get there. It's also another good option if you don't have the groove. If you have some foul tasting water that's safe to drink, Elixir will, you know, make it taste a little bit better when you're in the hotel.
Absolutely. Now that's just sort of scratching the surface with Camelback. If people want more information, where can they get it?
www.camelback.com. And we have a new website with tons of product videos. If you have questions or you just need information on what pack might be best for you, there's videos that'll link you to that too.
That's very, very helpful. Seth, thanks as always for showing us around.
Not a problem. Thanks for riding with us out here in Park City.
Back at press camp, I am with Bill. We're in the Cat Eye suite, and we're looking at a very wide range of products. Last year here at press camp, we talked a lot about lights, and there's some nice innovations as well this year, but then some new stuff that maybe people won't expect from Cat Eye. Bill, let's start with the lights. Let's talk about these lights that are sitting here. Tell everybody what, describe what we're looking at. We're going to put the pictures on the website as well.
Yeah, sure. So what we're looking at first and foremost are some safety flashing lights known as the Rapid family. And they're Rapid because they have kind of a unique rapid flashing pulse pattern that you really have to see to understand. But there are three basic models here. We have Rapid 1, 3, and 5. Rapid 1 naturally has one high-powered LED. And they are USB rechargeable, which is a nice feature for this type of product, and have a retail of $35. The Rapid 3 runs on one AA battery and naturally has three LEDs and is $25 retail. The 3 I've had as a sample for a while now, and when I get out to bike shops, I'm able to have been showing that to some retailers, and they think that it's just a fantastic light, especially at its price of $25. And in fact, it's as bright as some $100 taillights that are on the market right now. It's just a phenomenal amount of light for what you're paying. And then we have the Rapid 5, and it's basically the Rapid 3 with the addition of two side-facing LEDs to kind of enhance your side visibility. And it's powered by two AAA batteries and retails for $30. So that's the Rapid family of lights.
Now, on the headlight front, you've got a new headlight here, which is sort of unique. It just turned off. Why did it do that?
It's called the AU230, and basically it's a follow-up to our reflex taillight that we had out last fall. It has a photo-optic sensor in it and a built-in motion sensor. And if you engage the automatic mode on the light, if it sits still for 50 seconds, it'll shut itself off, which is really kind of helpful. I was out at dinner several weeks ago and noticed a guy ride up and lock his bike up in front of the restaurant and walk away with his headlight on. And, you know, hopefully it wasn't dead when he came back out. And sometimes, I mean, when I see that, I want to go over and turn it off. But, you know, you feel a little weird about tons of other people's stuff, too. So the AU230 is kind of nice and in that it will shut itself off. So you have battery life left when you have to ride home later in the evening. And we've got a target retail of $30 on that. It runs on four AA batteries.
Nice. And then perhaps more hardcore commuting, or certainly for mountain biking, is the Sumo line. Let's talk about that.
Sure. So we've got the Sumo 2 and the Sumo 3. And we choose to name them Sumo because they're pretty big and they're burly and they put out a lot of light. They're a powerful product, a lot like a sumo wrestler. So the Sumo 3 is our highest end light. It retails for $550. And on its high setting, it's creating 1,600 lumens of light, which is more than enough to ride any trail at any speed. And then we also have the Sumo 2, which retails for $450, and it's generating about 1,000 lumens of light. I've used the Sumo 2 as a helmet mount before. These are all aluminum construction. They've got good cooling fins. They've got air porting. The focus is on absolute reliability. But even at that, with that robust construction, the Sumo 2 is light enough to use as a helmet light. They come with a 4,600 milliamp hour lithium ion standalone battery that you have to plug a cord into. The battery is fairly light. I've run it in a jersey pocket, no problem. Not really noticed that back there. And it also comes with a strap that you can run around mounted underneath the top of the or underneath your top tube on your bike. So this is our trail running light. They have three modes. We refer to DNA. It's dynamic, normal, and all night. And in the all night mode with both batteries, you get 10 hours of ride time. And all night is plenty of light for most trail riding, actually, especially like climbing or flat terrain. So, and again, so that's the Sumo.
Now, a new USB rechargeable light, which is extremely lightweight, yet very, very bright. We were looking at it before, and I mean, we're in full bright sunlight here, and you could still see the beam. This looks like a new product. What's the name of this product, and what are its attributes?
So, yeah, this is brand new. Rapid 3 and Rapid 5, and then this product here, the NanoShot. I saw for the first time 2 nights ago, the package arrived from Japan. The NanoShot I am really stoked about. It's billed as a real high-end commuting light. It's a 250-lumen light, retails for $120, and is USB rechargeable. I bench-tested it the other night on high. I got 3.5 hours of runtime. I haven't had a chance yet to test it on its flashing and its low modes. I say it's billed as a high-end commuting light because I think we're going to let a crossover application with this for trail light, for trail use as well. Matter of fact, I took it out last night and rode with it, and just by itself, mounted on the handlebars on a fire road climb under a forest canopy, it was putting out totally enough light to see all the trail irregularities, all the rocks and divots and everything else. And the light is fantastically light and very, very small. I can't wait for this light to get out. And that's a market that I see, a market segment of lights that I see is really growing in popularity, is that USB rechargeable 200 to 250 lumen light in that $120 to $150 price category. So I think we have a real strong competitor in that popular segment with the NanoShot.
Speaking of a popular segment, over the past couple of years, helmet cameras have become very, very popular. And CatEye's coming out with one. It's the Inno. But you're doing some things that are different from maybe some of the more well-known helmet camera competition that's out there. So let's talk about the Inno and its attributes as a helmet cam, because we're not just talking about a camera here. It's also a GPS.
Yeah, that's correct. It is a GPS video camera. And the Inno we came up with to kind of focus in on a segment that we've coined socially enabled GPS. So it's not so much diagnostic and directional. As a matter of fact, there is no LCD readout on the device itself. What it allows you to do is really capture the experience of riding and share that with folks that weren't fortunate enough to be there along the ride with you. For instance, I've got most of my family is back on the East Coast, and they just don't have any clue how beautiful it is in the Rocky Mountains. So this enables me to share some of that experience. I'm on my mountain biker primarily, so I get back into some country that a lot of people never see. And so this lets them really get a chance to see that. And the way it does that is it writes the GPS and video data to a micro SD card. And then I can upload that to the website that CatEye created called InnoAtlas.com, where they'll be able to see stills and video of the ride. And they'll also be able to see a map of the route that I rode. And we use that. The GPS data is overwritten over a Google Map image. And they can click on thumbnails along the map that will show them either video or stills that were exposed at those various points on the map. And the stills can be exposed in one of two ways. You can either manually shoot a still, or you can have it taken automatically, and it will automatically expose it a still at either 1, 2, 5, or 10 minute intervals, and that's something you can configure on the firmware that goes onto the micro SD card. It's been a great product. It's very, very lightweight. I always wear it on my helmet, and a lot of times I forget that I have it up there. At first, I was a little skeptical because I'm kind of a Luddite, which is funny because I work for a tech company. But now I don't ride without it. It's just so much fun to have along with me, and you never know what you're going to see on a ride. Another great thing about the Inno is that it runs on standard AAA batteries. So you can carry extra batteries with you in your jersey pocket. You know, if you run out in the middle of a ride, you can recharge and you're ready to go, no problem. It has a retail of $250. We kept that low. It doesn't record audio, and it does not shoot in HD. And these are concessions we made to make that price point and also to increase your storage capacity. It'll support up to a 32 gigabyte micro SD card, and at that max size, you can record 10 hours of video. It's fantastic. I think it has some application beyond just social and sharing experience. I think land managers, mountain bike advocacy groups can use it as a tool to inventory current trail networks, or also to propose new trails, or to inventory maintenance that might need to be done on trails, or you know, put in new features on along a trail. So the, you know, we're really excited about it, and we should be seeing that in retailer shelves soon, hopefully July.
You know, it's interesting. Here in Park City, we have a really great trail network. And every year they come out with a new trail map, and it's helpful. But I find that a lot of people, when they come to visit town, they want a better description of a trail than they're getting from a map. And so I could see somebody using this to maybe create a website to go along with the trail map for their community, so that people almost get a preview of where they're going to go and a better idea of, I hate to say it this way, but what they're getting themselves into. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I went out yesterday and rode Devo, and I probably got in over my head a little bit. It's a bit of a humbling trail, and just is a reminder that you need to, you can always learn more.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if I'd been able to see like video from the trail, I would have known that it wasn't the fast, flowy single track I was hoping it was, but there, definitely something a little more technically challenging. Yeah. So that makes absolute sense. That's a great point.
Yeah. On this product, one of the things that I saw on your website, the enoatlas.com, was that not only can I see photos and videos, but I can also see metrics from the ride, and I can almost go through the ride, have it play through the ride and show what the metrics were. How does that work? Do you need to have a computer? Does it work with a computer? Talk us through that.
Sure, that's true. So there's an option at the bottom of the viewing screen that says display graph. And if you click that, your video or your video and pictures, images are replaced by basically we've got a face of a cat eye computer that displays time, speed, elevation, and distance. And then there's also a line chart across the bottom of the graph that compares speed, altitude, and distance. And there's a little green dot that will actually trace out your route, and you can hit play, and that little green dot will start to move, and you can hit pause too, and you can see what your speed, elevation, time, and distance were at any given point along your route. So there is some metric gathering ability to Eno that you can review at a later date, and at all times your total ride time, average speed, and ascending and descending elevation is always displayed at the top. So this would be great too for bike shops that feature like a weekly shop ride. They could take this and record all of their shop rides and post the links on their website, and that way people that are thinking of doing a ride they've never done before know what they're getting themselves into before they go out. They can see that ride profile and kind of help them choose the right ride for them. From their ability.
One of the things you showed me earlier was that when you do upload to your website, that it's putting the videos up on YouTube. So it's a standard YouTube video that people can get to easily. Very, very nice. So looking forward to seeing that coming out in the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, we've talked about a lot of products. If people want to get more information, of course, I'm going to have photos on my website. But if people want more information, where can they get it?
They should certainly visit cateye.com, where we not only have product information, but we also have a lot of fun stuff. We have some lifestyle videos of Eno in action over in Moab, Utah. And then we have some fun videos, too, documenting the process that we went through making some of the new ads that you may have seen in some of the magazines, where we actually built a set, pretty elaborate sets, and had actors in there. Yeah, it's fun. So at cateye.com, and you'll get all this information there.
Excellent, Bill. Thanks so much for sharing the Cat Eye line for 2012.
You bet. Thank you, David. Appreciate it. My pleasure.
Back at Press Camp, we are in the Envy Suite, and Envy is a name that maybe some people don't know very well. We're talking to Jason, who's the founder of the company, but when you founded the company, it wasn't Envy. Tell everybody where that came from.
No, Envy was a response to a trademark issue we had in Europe, and so essentially the company was started out as Edge Composites. And when we started to move into Europe, we found that there was a trademark issue that we hadn't foresaw. And unfortunately, when we started the company, we were more concerned about making bike parts than we were filing trademarks. So we needed to make an adjustment so that we could grow on that market. It's too big of a market to ignore. Envy was gave us the option to keep our logo and kind of the visual recognition of our brand very similar, and so that's where the Envy name came from.
So for those of you who are looking for Edge and were wondering where they went, they're right here. They've been here all along, right in Ogden, Utah, so that's a good thing to know. When the company started, what was your vision? What did you want to achieve with the company and its products?
It was a pretty simple view of being able to put a group of people together that were innovative and had like mind, and be able to develop some of the best products that we were capable of developing without any compromises. And so it was more of a design and engineering think tank of ideas and enthusiasm. And what you see is, and will experience for that matter when you ride our products, is that they're designed by people that love to ride and love products that ride well. And you'll sense that when you ride our products.
Let's talk about your first products, and then we'll talk a little bit about the evolution. Where'd the company start? What kind of products are people familiar with from you?
Initially, when we first started the company, we spent a couple of years designing wheels and I guess forks for that matter, kind of behind closed doors while we made products for other companies outside of the bike industry, like Black Diamond, Burton Snowboards, and even Eklund Medical, which is an X-ray company. So it was a way for us to kind of bring in a little cash while we spent all the time developing the products. But 2008, we launched a full wheel line for both mountain and road, and started our fork line. Since then, we've backfilled with stem, seat post, full handlebar line, both mountain and road, and completed the fork line with some cyclocross product as well. So, yeah, that's where we stand.
So lots of companies in the industry making wheels, lots of companies making cockpit components. You're an American company. What differentiates your components, just in general? We'll talk about specific products in a moment, but what differentiates your components from those of your competition?
Well, I would like to say that we're the best at what we do. Of course, everybody's going to say that. But essentially, we set out to be an American manufacturer. You'll quickly find as you look at our company that we're a company that likes to have a lot of firsts. It would be great to be a company that was able to say that they're an American manufactured product wholly. We do all the wheels here in Utah. All the hoops are done stateside. Due to cost constraints, we had to move, components overseas. But unlike a lot of the other relationships where people go overseas and just say, hey, we need a handlebar, here's our shape, we develop the tooling, we develop the laminates, we test in-house. We have our own machining facility in-house. We're able to do all of it. And then we hand off the designs to our Asian partners. So we still fully, feel like we're in charge of the laminates and the designs and development of our products. And I think that's a little different than most. And then, we have a pretty unique process. And so, in an effort to continue to chase first, we've even gone into downhill and have, we have World Cup downhill wins on carbon hoops, which we were the first to do that. And it requires special process and unique relationship with materials to be able to achieve products that can withstand those kind of environments. And so that complements all of our products across the line.
So going down that road, we were speaking earlier about safety and about reliability. And I think with a lot of carbon components, carbon in general, I get a lot of people saying to me, is this something I can really take down a switchbacky descent? Am I going to be worried about, as I said earlier, did I pay my life insurance? What's your philosophy when it comes to lightweight versus safety and function?
Well, carbon as a material is a little dangerous for that because it is such a unique material and offers such great properties that it tends to lure people into making incredibly light product. And the properties of the material are such that you can go places where you can't with other materials. And so, there are products out there and there have been situations out there where people have gone as light as they possibly can. Our company, is kind of a function first design philosophy. And everything we make has subtle functions that we put a lot of effort into developing and making, kind of feature benefits to the product. But most importantly, we're not an apologetic company when it comes to putting stuff out that we can't stand behind, and we will always stand behind our product. So there is, when a product's developed and designed in-house, we don't put ourselves in a position where we're going to have to apologize for, creating something that was suspect. So there's no rider weight limit on any of our products. We do a lot of testing in-house and a lot of validation. And And then last but not least, we all ride the product, so we must trust them. So we put miles in on them.
I was going to say, looking around the room, it's a room full of cyclists. I mean, I'm feeling kind of weak looking at you guys. So what about, you said stand behind your products. Let's talk a little bit about that. Warranty. How do you stand behind your products?
I appreciate you bringing that up, actually. We've always had a two-year standing warranty on our product. It's, you know, we feel we build the strongest, lightest products in the market. And so we have a standing two-year warranty, as well as we have a lifetime crash replacement warranty. So once you become a member of our family, we want to keep you there. And so if you were to have an issue, and even something as silly as, you know, you loaded the bike in the back of the car and forgot to put the wheel in the car, you're back over it, we're going to give you an opportunity to buy another product at a replacement hoop at a discounted price. And then, you know, we're even so confident in the product that, like with our mountain products, where we're trying to generate or create a market for a product that does, a demographic that doesn't exist, being the carbon mountain wheel owner, we're even willing to give you cash back if you buy it in the first 30 days. You don't like it, send them back. You know, we feel like you're going to have a somewhat spiritual experience on them, and you're going to be perfectly stoked to keep them. So even, you know, on the mountain stuff, we even go that far.
So one of the things that we started talking about, that you began really with carbon wheels, and you've made some innovations and some partnerships recently. So let's introduce us to Simon, and I can talk to Simon a little bit about what he's done.
Yeah, I can't overstate how excited we are to have this partnership. In the past, we felt like we've exercised our creativity to the extent that we could with our designs and answered everything we could within a structure and a strength aspect. But we were fortunate enough to meet Simon, who's a brilliant aerodynamicist and has allowed us to compete in the aerodynamic game now. So I'll let him take it from here.
Okay, well, I'm going to start first. Aerodynamics. So designing airplanes, is that what we're talking about?
Not at all, no. I actually come from a race car background, and I think although it's a completely different, the actual aerodynamics are completely different with the bicycle, the processes and the instrumentation and the methodology we use is very similar. And working as an aerodynamicist in Formula One for 10 years, I learned a lot of hard lessons there about how you should set the flow conditions as accurately as possible in the wind tunnel, and also you should be absolutely confident that your fidelity is at a high enough level that you can measure the incremental gains. With the wheels that we've been developing, we're literally talking about trying to measure the difference of grams now and adding up those grams so they then finally represent some watts that the rider can feel when he's riding.
So let's talk about your newest wheels. You've gone to an aerodynamic wheel set that was designed, wind tunnel tested, tweaked, wind tunnel tested. Take us through the development process on this line.
Okay, well firstly, the fundamental thing for me when we started the project was that we wanted to develop the wheels within a frame. So all the wheels are developed within bicycle, because the flow interaction is very different from when you develop a wheel on its own. If you sort of look at a wheel kind of pragmatically, there's not so much to it. I mean, we're playing with the real width, the width, the depth, and the shape. I mean, that's fundamentally all there is. But surprisingly, from that, we started out by, you know, with an open mind and tried to understand all those attributes. And that actually resulted in over 100 hours in the wind tunnel and 5 iterations of testing, whereby we would go in the wind tunnel for 1 or 2 days and test out, say, 10 or 15 options of a wheel that was actually a rapid prototype wheel. It was not actually a rideable wheel, which means that we could look at more options more quickly. And then coming out of each session, we would then have a lot of data to analyze to understand the flow conditions and what's going on and what would be optimal. And gradually we worked the way through that, looking at the key metrics in the wind tunnel, which were the drag of the wheel, of course, but more interestingly, the stability of the wheel, which I think is something that's absolutely key to the efficiency and the end use of the wheel to the rider. It's pointless in having a wheel that's highly aerodynamic, but you can't ride in a windy condition. Mm-hmm.
So how do you measure stability? Because it seems like a very subjective measure.
Yes, that's right. It's a really tricky one, because generally when people describe their experience of stability, they're describing a condition you probably could never recreate. It's a gust, or moving past a gateway or something, or into a canyon. So what we wanted to do was to put a metric to that. So we developed a testing platform where we could correlate people's responses, the subjective responses, into and turn it into more into a science. And we started to see that the issues that we were having and that the, and where the instability comes from the wheel, and fundamentally that is that the steering torque will suddenly change, and it gives this a really unnerving sensation where you want to reach for your hold on for dear life or get off your tri bars and onto the drops, which is no good.
So what was the result? Talk to everybody about the actual product that resulted from all of this development.
Well, as I said, yeah, I mean, we were optimizing the different variables of the wheel, and our key remit was to have the most efficient wheel, and that's in terms of its aerodynamic drag, its stability, its weight, and its inertia. And the key thing where we were had a lot of where very subtle changes can really change the performance of the wheel is the shape of the wheel. Mm-hmm. And particularly on the front wheel, what's happening is the way the pressure is working on the leading edge of the rim and the trailing edge, and how they work together determines how stable a wheel is.
Okay. And what about the specific models that you're introducing here?
Okay, yes. Yeah, so we tried to sort of narrow it down to three wheel sets. So we have one wheel set where we said, right, we want a wheel that's it's light enough that people are going to use that all the time as a climbing wheel, and let's define a depth that is adequately light, and then make that as aero as possible. And that's the 3.4 wheel set from Envy, where we have a 35 millimeter front wheel and a 45 millimeter rear wheel. We then have like the sort of more generic middle of the road wheel, which is perfect for triathlon and everyday road racing sport heats when you maybe you're not trying to climb. And that's the 6.7, where we have a 60 millimeter front rim and a 70 millimeter rear rim. And then finally, we are developing a deep rim wheel, which is an 85 front and a 95 rear, which is aimed more at the serious triathlete where you're getting the ultimate speed.
Nice. Now, if people want more information where they can really learn more about the wheels, find out about maybe price points, or even find a dealer where they'll be able to find the product, Jason, where do they go?
Well, we'd invite them to go to our website, which is www.envycomposites.com, and Envy spelled ENVE. And we not only have all the pricing and whatnot on the website, but there is an article on there that walks people through the whole development process that Simon went through. So they can get all the information they're looking for on the website.
Sounds great. One more thing before we go, and that is I want to find out about your new version of road bars. So walk me through what we're talking about when we're looking at your new road bars.
Well, there's a lot of subtleties with our road bars, and there's a lot of details that need to go into road bars to address people's needs out on the road. Mm-hmm. When you're out on a long road ride, you really need to be able to adjust your hand positions almost constantly in order to prevent fatigue from setting in. So our bars are designed to do that, to allow you to put your hands comfortably in any position on the bar, including the very end of the bar, where we have a special end cap that won't come out, won't pop off in the back of your car, and allows you to use that end of that bar as a hand position. Then we also have a little droop to the tops because your hands naturally go to that position, and a little bit larger radius than a lot of them at the lever positioning area, so that you have a lot more adjustability to rider preference.
So differentiating yourselves from some of the other bars on the market, what would you say are the three differentiating factors of the Envy bars?
I'd say that we don't really have a lot of outward features that you really notice from, let's say, 5 feet away. Mm-hmm. A lot of the features are a little bit more subtle and really intended to be something that you would pick up at the end of a long ride. All the cross sections, the only cross sections that are round are the clamping zones where they need to match with another part. All of the cross sections are designed to match the shape of your hand in that position. We measure our widths at the hoods where your width needs to be specified to your body. And then in the drops, you're going to have a little wider position to where you want to have a little bit more control and a little bit more leverage for out of the saddle kind of conditions.
Excellent. Price points on your road bars?
Oh boy, I'm not the right guy to ask.
Thank you so much, man. All right, no worries. All right, hang on. All right, Jason, tell everybody one more time where they can find more information on Envy and your complete line of products.
Again, it's www.envycomposites.com. Envy spelled E-N-V-E. And again, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, and we'll see you around press camp.
Yes, you will.
This is David from the Fredcast, and we're with Bike Hugger. We're here in the Hutchinson Suite at Press Camp, and I am with Levi. Levi's in sales and marketing for the company for North America. And before we talk about some consumer-based products, you've got a product here that consumers can get their hands on for the first time. Tell me about it.
So what I'm holding here is the Pro Tour Tubular. It's a tire that has won 9 out of the last 10 Tour de Frances, so one of the big things about it is it's never been available to the public before. So this is the first launch for it. We had a little bit of excess this year, so we decided to make it available to the public for the first time. There's 340 sets available worldwide. We have 34 sets here in the U.S. So at $500, it's two tires and two tubes of glue is what you get.
So first of all, most people initially heard 34 sets and they're like, why are you even talking about this? But then they heard the price point. So what is it that makes a $500 pair of tires worth $500?
So what these are is these are all handmade in Italy for our pros. And what it is there's it's a non-vulcanized tire, meaning that they're completely handmade. The tire is assembled one piece at a time, and the tread is actually glued on to the casing by hand versus melted onto the casing via vulcanization. So what happens is there's a cotton breaker under the tread and then a cotton poly casing and then the base tape. These are made one at a time. They're all date stamped. And what happens is you can actually age these tires. So in aging them, the cotton breaker actually starts to harden while the rest remains supple. So you put them up to about half pressure, put them in your wine cellar, or your basement at about 65 degrees, and they get more puncture resistant as time goes on, but the ride stays supple and smooth.
So because obviously these are professional grade tires, you're giving them to pro tour riders. And you talked about the aging. What's the minimum amount of age? And then what's sort of the, 12-year-old scotch amount of aging?
So minimum aging for these is 6 months, which all the stuff that we have here in the U.S. right now is at 6 months or more. They're all November, December manufacture date, according to our stamps. So anytime that consumer is going to be buying them now, they're going to be available to glue directly. Professionals such as, say, Lance Armstrong, he ages his a minimum of 5 years before riding. That's one of the things is the cotton breaker keeps getting harder, better puncture resistance, and it's one of the things that led to him having no flat tires in all of his tours. So we were the tire of choice for him for his entire existence as a Tour de France winner.
Amazing. Well, let's move on to something a little bit, at least more in the category of what I can afford. And let's talk about road tubeless. Now, tubeless is a technology that, we've certainly seen in other wheeled applications before, but one that is relatively new to road bikes and to mountain bikes. Just briefly, for those people who aren't familiar, explain what the concept is and how Hutchinson does it differently.
So what happens is this is a concept that was pioneered between us and Shimano. So here in my hand, I've got a Dura-Ace C24 wheel with one of our road tubeless Atom tires on it. The whole concept behind road tubeless is the fact that it gets rid of the tube. In getting rid of the tube, you have a reduce in friction, so the tire and the tube aren't warring against each other. The other thing is you eliminate things like pinch flats. Without a tube, you not worrying about pinch flats, you can actually attain more comfort. So if you're usually running about 120 PSI, like myself, I'm about 150 pounds, I drop it down to about 90 PSI. Mm. We make every single one in our factory in Montargis in France, and there's a 100% quality check of every tire that goes out. So everyone is hand-touched as they're going out the door of our factory.
Let's talk a little bit about the bead, because I think the bead is probably perhaps one of the most important parts of making sure that this stays on the rim. What's different about your bead?
So in researching road tubeless that we did a few years ago, what we came to the conclusion is an Aramid or a Kevlar bead, as most people know it, has too much stretch. It has about a 7% stretch rate, which is way too much to be functional for us. So what we did was we took carbon fiber in a blade, spooled it up into a bead form, and that's what we're using because carbon fiber has less than a 2% stretch rate at this point. So it's much more resilient to stretch, and the way that the profile of the rim is and the shape of our bead where it's kind of blocked, it actually locks into the rim. So you get a very tight air seal, and in case of a flat, which is very, very rare, it won't come unseated from the rim.
Anything special other than obviously putting air into the tire that people should be considering when they're running a tubeless tire?
Well, we do offer sealant ourselves, and there's other sealants on the market as well. And I always recommend using sealant for the sheer fact that it's extra peace of mind. I mean, we make our Protect Air Max, which is sold in most stores that you can find road tubeless in. So what it does is there's some crystals in it, and it's a liquid latex. So it puddles at the bottom, and then as you ride, it spools around. And so the crystals will help fill any cuts that you get. You might have a slight, maybe 3 to 5 pound loss in pressure, but nothing that you can't keep rolling on.
Let's talk about the range. I know that you've got sort of three levels of road tubeless. Tell us about those.
So we have three in our premium range that are all made in France, and I wouldn't consider it a good, better, best scenario. What I would consider it is a picking the right tool for the job. So in my hand is the Atom. So this is what I would consider our race day clincher. It's very tacky, very soft. It's about a 1500 kilometer tire. So it will wear out pretty quick, dual compound, but a nice ride and rails through some corners. The Fusion 3 is the next tire that we have. And the Fusion 3, what it's going to do is it's a three compound tire, 3000 kilometer with a Kevlar belt. There's no breaker or anything in the Atom, so you get quite a bit of puncture resistance going to the Fusion 3. It's about 20 grams heavier, so you go from 280 grams to about 305. So it's a little bit heavier, but with the three compounds, it still corners very, very well, and the peace of mind of a little bit of cut resistance under the tread is phenomenal. Our last tire is the Intensive. The Intensive is an additional 20 grams heavier, so you're talking 320 grams, but it's a 5,000K tire. So 5,000K, we mix a few other compounds with the rubber, make it a little bit stiffer, but with these other compounds, it actually gives it decent grip, and it's a full Kevlar belt from bead to bead. So it's sidewall cut protection, protection underneath the tread, and it's just bomb-proof.
Okay, price points on those three?
The high retail of those is $88.
Very, very affordable. I just want to go back to the Pro Tour tire for a moment. $500 a pair. Where do people get tires like that?
You can walk into any of your local bike shops, and we usually go through distribution for everything. But in this case, just due to the high price point, your local bike shop can call us directly at Hutchinson USA, and we can send it directly to your bike shop.
Great. And for the consumer who wants to find out more about Road Tubeless, about your Pro Tour, or any of the range, where can they go?
HutchinsonTires.com.
Excellent. Levi, thank you so much.
Not a problem. Have a great day.
Well, that's it. I hope you enjoyed today's interviews from Press Camp. Be back tomorrow with another final episode from 2011 Bike Press Camp. In the meantime, if you'd like to check out anything related to the Fredcast, go to our website at www.thefredcast.com. If you'd like to follow along with all the happenings here at Press Camp, go ahead and follow me on Twitter. The Twitter handle is Fredcast. And if you'd like to send me an email, the email is thefredcast@gmail.com. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Fredcast. Be back tomorrow with another episode. In the meantime, enjoy Happy by Jimmy Bratcher, but most of all, enjoy the ride.